Rarely is such a big sonata played by such a small pianist, diminutive 84-year-old Seymour Lipkin, who learned his craft from many who are now considered legends, played a Philadelphia Chamber Music Society recital this week, ending with Beethoven's Piano Sonata No. 29, generally known as the Hammerklavier, the one sonata that even the greatest Beethoven pianists avoid during their later years, but not Lipkin. What keeps him in such good shape? The Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns visited him in his Upper West Side studio and discovered many reasons why his fingers are relatively fearless, though none of them really explain how he does what he does.
The piano sonatas of Beethoven are a bottomless pit. You'll never get your hands completely around them. You might not even get your arms around one of them, especially when, this often thorny music, strikes out in so many different directions, sometimes with what comedian Peter Schickley used to call the grossest fugues you've ever heard. Seymour Lipkin seems to keep his composure by knowing when to say yes to Beethoven in ways that open up doors to finding important things in the music that he previously missed.
You know, if you play piece by Beethoven and you identify with the composer and try to understand what he is trying to tell you, he says, Lipkin, make a sforzando here. And I say, well, Ludwig, I don't feel like it. Shut up and do what I tell you.
But Lipkin also knows when to say no.
We're always up against this problem of the metronome marks. The first movement is marked 138. Well, that is a madman's tempo. You can't possibly play it at 138, or the piece just disappears. I mean, you know, come on, fellas.
Complete fidelity to the score, as simple as the concept sounds, will never happen 100% or anything close to it, if only because Beethoven's sonatas aren't some storehouse of absolute information that's the same for everyone who studies them hard enough. Certainly, Lipkin would not have recorded the complete Beethoven sonatas for Newport Classics if he felt, at that time, he hadn't studied them comprehensively. But he does them quite differently now.
It's a constant challenge to make the moment deeply expressive, this note and that harmony, within the context of a large paragraph, a large idea. Well, that's a problem in all music, but particularly in a piece like this, where the ideas are so huge, and I can see what the thought is going into the construction of these huge paragraphs, I think better than I did before. And it just that, you know, as you go along, you understand what he's doing. Oh, that's what he's doing. Oh, I see. That's what he's doing. And before, sometimes you just sort of play it and rely on your instinct, which may not be as detailed and as clarified as it is later on.
The fact that Lipkin had to live so many years to reach these conclusions doesn't seem to trouble him in the least, no doubt because his brain hasn't outlasted his fingers. He has various explanations. Until recent years, he ran a mile or two a day. He has a regimen of finger exercises. But don't they all? Bottom line, his fingers still move.
They go. They move. I don't question why. I just see if they move, that's fine. And they seem to be moving perfectly all right. In a way, better. Because the discipline and the efficiency gets better as you go along. You don't waste so much energy.
But would he play some barn burner, like a Liszt Mephisto waltz?
Sure I would. Why not? I just said that as a provocation for your, as a provocative answer to your question. It might not be what I would be most interested in doing.
Lipkin has been caught in repertoire that's not entirely convincing for him at this point in his life. He spends summers in Blue Hill, Maine, and recordings from Kneisel Hall, which is run by his wife, have been issued on downloads on Amazon.com, including a Chopin concert that doesn't show him at his best. The Detroit-born Lipkin does have a range that hardly stops at the piano repertoire. Having studied at the Curtis Institute under Rudolf Serkin and Mieczysław Horshavsky, he had a concert career for a while and then turned to what he swears was always his first ambition, which was conducting. For some 20 years, that was his primary line of work, conducting both the Joffrey Ballet and the Long Island Philharmonic, returning to the piano around 1980. He's not too clear on how it all unfolded chronologically. About a year ago, a historic performance from the 1959 Salzburg Festival surfaced with Lipkin playing piano on Leonard Bernstein's Age of Anxiety Symphony with the New York Philharmonic, and Lipkin was as surprised as anyone.
We went all over Europe and went to Russia, and then all of a sudden this thing appears. Nobody said a word to me or to the Philharmonic, I think, you know, they just poof, there it was. I thought, I can't believe I memorized this whole piece. The first time I played it, I used the music, and Lenny complained. He said, you promised me. So then I had to go, I went and memorized it. It's a long piece.
Among his students at Curtis and Juilliard, he's now on the faculty for both, he is fairly infamous for recognizing when students are coming in underprepared and making his displeasure known with a single withering look. The paradox is that even when they do come prepared, and often with a lot of questions, Lipkin won't necessarily answer them, and not because he can't. His 23-year-old Korean student Yakwon Sang-woo had a particularly hard time with that.
I asked him a couple times about like something specific, and he said, well, you have your own ideas. I'm sure you can figure it out.
The point, as it turns out, was to give his student exactly the opposite of what he had in his homeland.
Typical way of teaching in Korea could be sometimes looked as just instructing the details how their teachers want their students to play. So it's usually after you finish studying with the teacher there, it's kind of hard to do what you want to do, like when you don't have anybody to play for. So I think first time when I came to Curtis, Ms. Lipkin's teaching style isn't all about like little details or anything. So I had a little bit of a hard time what to do and how to practice even for 1 or 2 years.
The final result for Yakwon Sang-woo, however, was recently winning the William Capel competition. What Lipkin does share with the students is the importance of inhabiting the composer.
I say to my students, you know, at this moment you are 8 feet tall. You know, and we become the greatness of the composer that we're dealing with. And afterwards, you know, we shrink back to 5'6". It's a remarkable, that's a wonderful experience, you know, to become the person that you are representing, insofar as you can do so.
Such self-effacement doesn't always yield the sexiest playing in the world. But after a certain point, audiences don't need beautifully varnished sonorities and unshakably accurate performances. We don't need to be dazzled every time we go to concerts, because when we aren't dazzled, we actually hear more music.
Philadelphia Inquirer's David Patrick Stearns.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.